Good morning and welcome to Shattering Myths, a program devoted to the largest segment of society, to those who are open to the realization or have already migrated to the point that they've come to realize that all of the world's religious, political, economic, and military institutions are counterproductive and corrupt. I am Yada. Our number, if you'd like to join us anytime over the next 2 hours, is toll-free, 877-300-7645. Say it ain't so. Oh, my, do we have a brouhaha festering across America. The Obaminator-in-Chief is trying very hard to create a this idea that climate change is a serious problem in America. Now, the fact is that it isn't, and we can talk about that in a moment. But he is scheduled a trip, burning all manner of Jet A in the high atmosphere aboard his 747 jet to fly into northern Alaska to pronounce a mission, a grand crusade against global climate change, he says. So, to soften the territory so that in a state where he is not very popular, that he might receive at least a modicum of support, he changed the name of Mount McKinley to Mount Denali. Now, the Ohio lawmakers, however, reacted angrily Saturday and Sunday as the White House's announcement that President Obama would formally rename Alaska's Mount McKinley, North America's highest peak, Denali, during his trip to the last frontier. Oh, it's called the last frontier this week. The last frontier. We have no more frontiers. Well, I didn't know it was the last one, but I guess it must be, so we must protect it. I saw, by the way, a bumper sticker yesterday as I was going to dinner, saying that that the Earth does not belong to us; we belong to it. Yeah, and rather than having coexist out of the little symbols, they wrote tolerance out of the little symbols. Of course, anybody that was intolerant of their acceptance of mutually exclusive ideas as being irrational, they would have a tizzy fit against. The mountain is Denali. Ever since I began traveling worldwide, and I've been through Alaska and have been in Denali National Park, I referred to the mountain as Denali. This notion that we as Americans buy everything, own everything, and therefore can name anything we want, like, how about Jesus Christ, is utter nonsense. Denali is the lofty one in the native language. Yes, we claim to have bought Alaska from the Russians. I don't recall the Russians buying it from anyone. And when we bought Alaska, we most certainly didn't buy the people. And we didn't buy their language. It was their land. We didn't have any right to it, nor did the Russians. And to rename their places because we liked an American president's name is ridiculous. You know how many times Scott McKinley set foot on the mountain that was changed to bear his name?
I'm going to say zero.
That is correct. Do you know how many times McKinley, whose name was ascribed by American politicians to Mount Denali, you know how many times he was in Alaska?
I'm probably going to go zero again.
Yeah, zero. Zero. And yet the Ohio lawmakers are having a tizzy fit. Mount McKinley has held the name of the nation's 25th president for over 100 years. You know, if McKinley is an Ohioan, why not name an Ohio mountain after him? You know, if that's what you want to do. Now, you know, the Miami Indians were pretty dominant here, but let's just forget about them for a moment. Why don't you name someplace in Ohio after him? After all, he grew up here. This is Bob Gibbs. He's a Republican from Ohio. He said in a statement, "This landmark is a testament to the countless years of service to our country." Oh, my goodness. Yeah, politics is not a job. Politics is not self-serving, no. If you run for president, it's a service. That's why you get that big house. That's why you get the fancy accoutrements that go along with being a senator and a president. That's why you're paid so much and why you don't have to pay attention to all of the other difficulties in life that the rest of us must deal with. Service, yeah. If that's a service, then I tell you, we all should be servants. It said he went on to describe Obama's action as constitutional overreach. Now, I want to tell you, his conniption fit against Americans keeping and bearing arms, that's a constitutional overreach. His issue with free speech, and I'd say that's a constitutional overreach. He has many constitutional overreaches, including his campaign to redistribute wealth in a socialistic fashion. However, this is not one of them. He went on to say that this is an insult to all Ohioans. You know, I'm sitting here in a home right now in Ohio. I just don't feel insulted. Yeah, there's not much that Obama does that I would find less than reprehensible. But this happens to be one of them. Now, his reasons for doing it were disgusting. But it's the right name for the mountain. Moving on, we find that in Palmyra, as has been the case with Islam for all of its 1,400 years, Muslims can't build anything. There is nothing a Muslim has ever built that people will want to go see. They don't design it, they don't build it, they don't maintain it. But Muslims these days aren't even very good at destroying things. They have tried mightily to destroy a second temple in Palmyra. The first one was to Baal, the Lord. The second is to Bel, which is the named for the same god, the god represented by the sun. Bel was the chief god of Babylon, and then on to Assyria, and then on past Assyria to the Persians. Bel is just a same basis, but the different pronunciation for the word for Lord. And what's interesting is not only did they try to destroy the second temple, but that they failed, that they do not know that their Quran uses the same name, the Lord, to describe the initial God, because as the chief deity of that region, the Yemenite Hanafis that comprised the initial surahs of the Quran, they were all plagiarized for them from them, called their God Baal, the Lord. And so it's the same God. They're actually tearing down temples named for their wannabe God, the very name that Yahweh ascribes to HaSatan throughout the Torah, Prophets, and Psalms. And so it is interesting that in the most recent attempt, and all there is now is some unsupported columns that, with their munitions, they failed to bring them down. Not only can't they build, they can't even destroy. And they're so stupid, they cannot distinguish the fact that this God is the same God that they call Allah. And they need to figure that out, because all you have to do is read the Quran, and the first surahs revealed chronologically clearly indicate that the Islamic God was named the Lord, which is the name of Baal. It is also interesting that if you look at the carnage that took place a week ago in Bangkok, remember that was the horrific story that the Erawan Shrine, which I believe was a Hindu shrine, was bombed, that there were 17 now. I think the death toll finally went up to 20 people, if I'm not mistaken. 20 people that were killed. This was back on August 17th. And the government said it was the worst single attack in the history of Thailand. Oh, and there was a manhunt for the perpetrator. And all we had was a picture. Well, now they have one of the perpetrators in custody and found all sorts of bomb-making apparatus in his home. But when he turned out to be a Muslim, guess what? Nobody wanted to talk about it. They wouldn't even confirm that he came from Turkey. But we know he was a Muslim because his cohort in all of this was a woman. And guess what she was wearing? A hijab. You know many non-Muslims that walk around in tents? Yes, indeed. She turned out to be a Muslim, and once she turned out to be a Muslim, the press doesn't want any part of it. No reporting whatsoever. The only reporting this week thus far on the Bangkok killers is that the police claimed the reward that had been established for their capture. Which is pretty silly, because that's supposed to be their job. But the press is all across the world reporting on the police claiming the reward, and no one is affirming that this terrorist attack was perpetrated by Muslims. And I bring it up in this sequence of our program because what did he bomb? Bombed a temple. Yes, you see, no God has the right to be worshipped other than Allah. That's what the Quran says. So, since only Allah has the right to be worshipped, according to the Quran, Muslims must destroy all non-mosques, all religious sites that are not mosques, any political site that would take one's attention away from Allah and his right to be worshipped, which means any political choice that people might have made. So a political edifice and a religious edifice must be destroyed, and that's why they're destroying them. That's why these Muslims chose the shrine as a target. By the way, it is interesting, and I did not recognize it until I was doing my research this morning, that there is a connection between the United States and the temple to Bel in Palmyra. Scott, what do you think the connection is between the United States? And I will give you a clue. It has to do with the U.S. Capitol, Congress, where the Senate and Congress meet. There's a connection between Congress and the Temple to Bel. So, Scott, I left you with a clue and with the opportunity to guess what the connection was between the Temple to the Lord, Bel, and Palmyra and the United States Capitol.
Well, to be fair, I would have never gotten this unless you gave me another hint during the break. It's the architecture. It looks very similar to the Capitol buildings.
Yeah, in fact, if you put them face to face, side to side, the side of the U.S. Capitol that's the most famous, the one that faces the mall, the one that faces the Lincoln and Washington memorials, shrines, if you will, monuments, the one where the President of the United States gives his inauguration address, that one, the one that the U.S. congressmen and senators always pose for their initial pictures on before the start of each Congress. That facade of the U.S. Capitol is identical to the Temple of Bel in Palmyra, and it was used as the basis for the design. Just another swipe at this notion that America was a Christian country. Only Christian if your God is the Lord, Baal. And it's also interesting, of course, that these temples do not go back into antiquity in the sense of into the 3rd, 4th, or 5th century BCE. This is not something that would be in the range of 1000 BCE, and we're dealing with the likes of Babylon or with Egypt at 1400, 1500 BCE, or the Assyrians. No, no, no. Even though they were the most influential in this region, no, we're not dealing with that period of time. These temples to the Lord, to the God of Christianity, really, were erected by Rome between 50 and 250 CE of this era. They're 1750 to 1900 years old. That tells you that Christianity emerged in Rome at the same time that Rome was worshiping the Lord as the sun. And it should not be surprising that so much of Christianity therefore models the unconquerable sun and the religion of Mithraism, and that carries so much of the Greek religion of Dionysus right along with it. This was all part of the Greek Empire after Alexander the Great, and then subsequently when the Romans conquered the Greeks, they just incorporated it right into their religion. So it's an interesting testament. It's a sad situation in the Vatican. Not that anything is anything other than sad in the Vatican, but Joseph Wesolowski, he was the archbishop and Vatican envoy to the Dominican Republic. Remember the story of Mr. Wesolowski, Scott? He was serendipitously taken out of the Dominican Republic for why the Vatican, under the darkness of night, removed him. What was he up to?
I do not remember the story.
Okay. He was using church funds to buy trinkets and medicines in some cases and food to bribe poor boys, typically under the age of 12, but most of them in their age of 10 to 12, to have sex with him. And his favorite target was a boy that was that had, and I don't know if it was cerebral palsy, but it was a very serious, I think it was epilepsy, actually. He had epilepsy. And there was a medication that that caused his symptoms to be controllable. And this archbishop would bring the medicines to the boy only if the boy allowed the archbishop to have sex with him. He was 10 when they began that routine. And it the not the Roman Catholic Church, but the government of the Dominican Republic, after countless complaints against this archbishop by these young boys and their parents, by witnesses, began an investigation where it was found overwhelmingly that not only had this archbishop of Roman Catholicism committed these crimes, but that the scope of his criminal activity, his pedophilia, went over the course of a decade, and that church officials knew about it, and that they found internal records where the church officials were trying to cover it up. That's our boy. So here's the situation. This archbishop of the Roman Catholic Church, and because the Roman Catholic Church wants to consider itself a country, the envoy of the Vatican, this legacy of the imperial beast that was the Roman Empire, this outgrowth of that beast, the most menacing and damaging institution in all of human history, according to Yahweh, and I agree with him in that assessment. They knew full well that their archbishop and envoy was molesting little boys, and that they were doing their best to cover it up to protect the reputation of their tattered regime. And so when it became a news story, when the investigation broke that the Catholic Church was aware of his pedophile behavior and bribery and blackmail, and just perverted activity, and the church's covering up of the same. What the Vatican did, I thought, was deplorable. Rather than allow the families and the community to get healing by trying and convicting this bastard. They, Roman Catholic Church, whisked him away, threw him out under the cover of darkness. And then when the Dominican Republic says, you know, we want to try him for these heinous crimes, they pled diplomatic immunity. And so the reason I bring up this story, this reprehensible specimen, he died. The archbishop died before he could be tried. No justice. The nature of Roman Catholicism.
To be fair, he probably didn't escape punishment.
Oh, no, no, no. You know, as a, for just being a Roman Catholic archbishop, 100% of those boys are hell-bent. They will... you know what's interesting, too, about hell? Yahweh did not establish hell as a place of punishment. He just established hell as a place of removing them from the rest of us so that we don't have to be around them. It's just a, from God's point of view, it's a place of time out where the most despicable of all humans go. You know who perpetrates the nasty nature of hell? Why hell would be such a horrible place to be? Well, it has nothing to do with God because he's not there.
Religions do.
You betcha that it's filled with religious people. It's filled with military people and political people. It's the people who go there who perpetrated hellish conditions on their subject as part of their service. They're the ones that make hell such a despicable spot. Yahweh's not torturing anybody in hell because he's not there. So all of the anguish of hell is being perpetrated by the inhabitants of hell, which would be a combination of Hasatan, his demons, and those who were in league with them, those who are religious. That's why hell is a hellish place.
Well, if you... finding out the truth, because you're gonna, you now know the truth, and now you know you can't, there's nothing you can do to be a part of it. That'd be pretty bad.
Yep.
That'd be pretty horrible.
He was 66 years old. He would have been the highest ranking church official to have faced pedophile charges, but this case was not seen. Last year, the Grand Pope, the title that was, of course, claimed by the emperors and Caesars of Rome, because Roman Catholicism is simply an outgrowth of the Roman Empire, called the church's activities and with regard to its propensity for its priests and bishops and archbishops to commit these crimes and then to cover them up, similar to a satanic mass. Interesting, a choice of words. It became news at the end of last week that the Taliban had seized the district headquarters in Afghanistan's Helmand province. Despite a whole onslaught of U.S. airstrikes to repel them, you know, we still have troops there, but we don't deploy our troops except on raids. Two NATO soldiers were shot dead. Do you think they were shot dead by Taliban members dressed in Taliban garb, Scott? Or maybe they would be shot dead by those America had armed and provided weapons to, and those that America had trained.
Well, I'm going to take choice B on this one.
Yeah, there you go. They were shot dead by uniformed men on the army base in the area. By the way, the area is famous for something, and that is that prior to America being there, when America used the Taliban to fight a proxy war against the Soviets, the Afghanistan of that time became the world's supplier of opium. It had about a 90% monopoly. And then under the Taliban, opium production fell to almost nothing. Well, now that America has reinvaded Afghanistan, Afghanistan is once again supplying the world's opium, used primarily to make heroin. There is a crisis continuing to rage that is now manifest throughout Europe. We talked about it some last week. Hungary is in the news now, making plans to reinforce its southern border. They're going to use helicopters, mounted police, and dogs. It's also considering using its army. As record number of migrants, many of them Syrian refugees, pass through coils of razor wire into Europe. Over 2,500, mainly Syrians, Afghans, and Pakistanis, crossed from Serbia into the European Union on Tuesday over, under, or around a razor wire barrier into the hands of an overstretched police force that has struggled to fingerprint and to process them. So I would ask you this question, Scott. Is the problem, and, you know, Merkel of Germany came out and said that it's the single biggest problem in Europe. Is this a European problem, or perhaps the cause of this problem lies elsewhere? What do you think?
It lies elsewhere.
Let's see, the countries that they're coming from into Turkey are Syria, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. What do you think the percentage of the population of those countries that is Islamic might be?
I'm going to 99% maybe.
Yeah, right around that number now. Yeah. It used to be a little less than that in some of those countries because they had dictators who protected the minority religions. Now they're under the dominion of fundamentalist Muslims, and of course the percentage of non-Muslims is essentially non-existent. So if they're fleeing these three Islamic countries, Pakistan, Afghanistan, and Syria, if those are the three Islamic countries that they're fleeing, and by the way, that's really not fair because if we look at the migration into Italy, which is a huge problem in Spain, they're coming from Libya. And there's others coming from Egypt and many coming from Iraq. All of the donor countries, what do they have in common?
They're all Islamic, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Let's see. They're not even in the same area geographically. We've got countries in northern Africa, and we have countries in the Middle East. I'm quite certain that geography is not the problem. So what's the problem?
The religion they choose to follow.
Why do they have to flee Pakistan and Afghanistan? Why do they have to flee Iraq and Syria? Why do they have to flee Libya and Egypt? What's going on in those countries that would cause refugees?
Well, you got a religious dominant population that's killing them if they stay.
That is correct. So in those countries, now that those countries are under the control of fundamentalist Muslims, they have perpetrated such repulsive conditions where women are treated as sex objects, where men who don't sign allegiance to them are beheaded, where children, both men and both boys and girls, are routinely raped in pedophilic acts, where children are kidnapped and enslaved, where children are blackmailed, where they're sodomized, that the conditions are so reprehensible in regions controlled by fundamentalist Muslims that we have the largest refugee problem of modern history. So, is the problem Islam or is the problem Europe?
It's always Islam.
No, I think it's the razor wire. It's whoever made the razor wire is making insufficiently terrorizing razor wire. That must be the problem.
Gotta be. Well, I mean, if we can blame McDonald's for making us fat, and you know, guns are just randomly shooting people.
you know, in Germany they say, you know, we actually need 1 million refugees a year because Germans are reproducing at below the level necessary to sustain the country. it's just like Japan. Reproduction rates are less than two per couple now, closer to one, which means that over a generation, the number of Germans, just like the number of Japanese, will fall by 40%. And so Merkel is saying we need these people not as just temporary asylum seekers, but as a permanent workforce. And so what part of Muslims not working when the only work for the first generations of Muslims, for the first 200 years of Muslims, was jihad, stealing, robbing other people. For the first 200 years, that's all that Islam was able to do.
Well, and they're not adding much more than that now.
No, and you look at Islamic countries. There's only one Islamic country that isn't floating on oil, although it has pipelines that it receives fortunes to allow the oil and gas to transport to transgress its country, particularly in from the Caspian Sea. There's only one country that even has a modicum of economy, not very good, but at a level that would probably put it in per capita income and productivity in the top 100 countries, but barely. There's only one Islamic country. That would be Turkey, because of the old Ottoman influence. But
well,
there isn't a single... Bad. Yeah, there's not a single other Islamic country apart from oil that's got anything going economically. The United Nations, being led by the French, deployed 10,000 peacekeepers, armed to the teeth, of course, and poured in more than $1 billion into Mali. You know, Mali... erupted and became a hellish place to exist because America and Qatar and other European countries, this was a boondoggle of Senator John McClown and the Obaminator, that we should bomb Libya. And that we should arm the Libyan freedom fighters so that they can have democracy. And not figuring out and understanding the mess that arming the Iraqis has had and therefore creating the Syrian civil war and the Iraqi civil war and giving Iraq to Iran. Being too dumb to figure any of that out. Those two clowns, decided that we would take out Muammar Gaddafi, and we did, and we created a country infinitely worse than the country that was controlled by Muammar Gaddafi, just like we did in Iraq. I mean, Iraq today is infinitely worse in every possible way than the Iraq was under Saddam Hussein. Anyway, when we did that and provided all of these weapons for the freedom fighters in Libya, which turned out to be nothing but jihadists, they became the central clearinghouse for weaponry for fundamentalist Islamic groups throughout the region. And a huge percentage of those weapons went to Boko Haram, and they were used then to kidnap and enslave little girls, turning them into sex toys. But it also, at the same time, destroyed Mali. And so the French decided they would go in and they would kick some jihadi behind. And I told you at the time that all they're going to do is make the situation worse. It's easy to get in and to begin a war. It's impossible to get out. Well, the UN is reporting that after providing 10,000 troops and providing over $1 billion in its efforts to turn back the clock on the 3-year conflict in Mali, all a direct derivative of the United States bombing Muammar Gaddafi into oblivion. They said that their mandate for Mali has no possibility of success. They have no chance of enforcing a peace deal. They realize that despite suffering the highest rate of losses of any active peacekeeping mission in the UN's history, that they're in a quagmire. The problem is the Tuareg groups. These are Muslims. They're fighting with one another for now who gets to impose their will. They represent a small percentage of the overall Mali population, even though Islam represents overall a high percentage. The Tuaregs claim that they are more worthy as Muslims than are others. So the army's redeployment is supposed to allow it to tackle the Islamist militants that it has scattered, but not, of course, defeated, by French troops after they hijacked a Tuareg rebellion in 2012. Now, a resurgence in the fighting between the Tuaregs, who total about 5% of Mali's 15 million people, are wrecking everything. Power tipped away from the Ighods in favor of the Ifugha clan, while the fighters from Libya returned after the 2011 revolution from a state they called Azawad. Arabs have also picked sides, and some former jihadists have joined them. Yes, we created chaos in an Islamic country, and now you have tribal warfare, because Islam still lives in the tribal system of 2,000 or 1,500 years ago, and you have jihad. All you have is who is better armed. And here they recognize that the problem was exacerbated when the jihadists returned from fighting in Libya, but they can't make the connection to blame America. Clashes broke out between the Gamouz militia and the Ifugha-led separatist alliance, the Azawad movements, which are Libyans, also engaged, and as a result, scores of people are dying. Sources in Kidal have reported an influx of jihadists in recent days, all driving pickup trucks from Libya, some even from Algeria, all with automatic weapons and 50 caliber machine guns, even anti-aircraft guns in the back. Yes, nothing says peace like trucks full of American weapons. Millions, 3 million as a matter of fact, from Mali have died or are refugees.